Morning, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Oh, my. It's been another one of those days, another one of those weekends, right? Right before airtime, I get a couple of updates here. It always happens this way, right? The big story today, as the whole history of the Cheney Rumsfeld Bush administration gets curiouser and curiouser and weirder and weirder, is that apparently Donald Rumsfeld, knowing that George W. Bush was a very shaky, out on the edge, dry drunk, weird little man who could be easily manipulated, Rumsfeld pushed Bush to invade Iraq by appealing to his religious beliefs during top secret defense briefings. How does that grab you? Now, remember, George told a member of the Palestinian government that God had told him to invade Afghanistan and God had told him to invade Iraq. It should start be starting to come clear here, I think, that George Bush was probably very easily manipulable. Not that he's not guilty of all the crimes committed during his administration, but very manipulable. A. B. Two losers from years and years and years in government, Cheney and Rumsfeld, saw an opportunity to destroy the United States and took the opportunity. And therein hangs a tale of 8 years' duration. We'll try to cover a little bit of it tonight. The, I honestly don't know where to start. I was going to start tonight with a story from Dallas. KTLA.com in Los Angeles is carrying the story. It's from Dallas. A Texas couple was eating, or were eating. Is couple, is that a singular or collective noun? I'm not sure how to use it. Let's do it the way the style book says. A Texas couple were eating a bag of Cheetos, bought at a store near Houston. The wife, Sarah Bell, pulled out a Cheeto that appeared to be someone in a robe praying. The Cheeto. Her husband said, "It looks like Jesus." So the couple has named it Jesus. They have, yes, Kathy, they have wrapped the Cheeto inside a tissue for safekeeping. There's no word yet whether they'll try to sell it on eBay. Now, you remember last year, a Missouri woman made a similar discovery in a bag of Cheetos. She also named her finding Jesus because it looked like Jesus Christ on the cross. And you people wonder why I insist that Christians are insane for the most part.
So they wrapped it in a little Kleenex
tissue.
Did they lay it in a manger? Little matchbox? Or?
I'm not sure. Not sure what they did with it. I really am not. That's what I was going to start with, but I'm not going to start with that tonight. What I'm going to start with is this that just flashed from the newspaper, the Indian.com. It's a South Asia newspaper. Let me back up a little bit. You know who's been put in charge now? It hasn't been confirmed by the Senate yet, but who's been put in charge of all U.S. forces in Afghanistan in addition to all NATO forces in Afghanistan, and that is this General McChrystal. General McChrystal's former job was apparently... Well, he ran special ops, special operations division of the U.S. military that answers to no one, does pretty much what the hell they please. That operation was dubbed Dick Cheney's private assassination squad. They only answered to Cheney. The general did. It was the Joint Special Operations Command. And Lieutenant General Stanley McChrystal, who's just been named the new commander in charge of the war in Afghanistan, was the guy who commanded that. JSOC, as I guess it's called. It's a long story, and I hope I can get to it a little bit later this evening. But just keep that in mind. General McChrystal, who headed the Joint Special Operations Command, a clandestine murder team that literally committed murders in the interest, of course, of the United States. Oops, scratch that. In the interest, of course, of Dick Cheney, and only in the interest of Dick Cheney. It was a hit squad not unlike Murder Incorporated or any gang of gangsters. It operated outside the law, outside the Uniform Code of Military Justice, outside the Geneva Conventions, outside every treaty the United States has ever signed, and outside U.S. law. It answered the Joint Command, Special Operations Command. It answered to one person, not the President of the United States, but to Dick Cheney. Not to the Secretary of the Army, but to Dick Cheney. Not to the Joint Chiefs or the Chiefs of Staff of the various services, but to Dick Cheney. So here's the article from the Indian News Service. A special death squad assassinated Pakistan's former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto on the orders of the former U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney, according to a Middle Eastern TV channel. I guess that would be what? Al Jazeera? Now, let me pause. Do you remember, and you can find this at a YouTube, several months ago, or was it a year or so ago, Kathy, remember when I played this clip? I don't know who else played it. I think at the time we were the only one that played it. It was a clip from a BBC interview with Benazir Bhutto, wherein she states categorically, she references the killing of Osama bin Laden. The fact that he was dead. And she stated it as matter-of-factly as saying that, her father had been, her father was dead. And we played that clip, and it wound up on a YouTube video, and I never saw it in American media. I don't know if it showed up. I have no idea. But here it is. A special death squad assassinated Pakistan's former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto on the orders of former U.S. President Vice President Dick Cheney. Cheney was the, this is a quote. Cheney was the chief of the Joint Special Operations Command, and he cleared the way for the U.S. by exterminating opponents through the unit and the CIA. General Stanley was in charge of the unit. Now, that's from The Nation, quoted U.S. columnist Seymour Hersh saying, we're going back a few years. The U.S. death unit killed Bhutto because she had told Al Jazeera TV about the assassination of Osama bin Laden. According to columnist Seymour Hersh, the U.S. leadership did not want Osama to be declared dead. It would have raised questions about the U.S. Army's presence in Afghanistan. According to Seymour Hersh, the former Lebanese Prime Minister Rafiq al-Hariri and the Army Chief were murdered for not safeguarding U.S. interests and for refusing to set up U.S. military bases in Lebanon. Ariel Sharon, the then Prime Minister of Israel, was also a key man in the plot. I mean, sometimes one and one equals two, and of course sometimes one and one does not equal two. I think the Rodney King tape displayed that, for those of you who remember. Things are not always as they appear to be. When Benazir Bhutto sits for an interview with the BBC and casually just drops into the conversation, not as a, oh my God, listen to this, but rather as an almost an aside, to the, I'm sorry, it was with David Frost. Okay, on the BBC? Okay.
What I was just reading is it says, Bhutto asserted to David Frost less than 2 months ago, this is back in December of 07, so we're talking about November of 07, that bin Laden had been murdered by Omar Sheikh, whom the Sunday Times of London once described as no ordinary terrorist, but a man who has connections that reach high into Pakistan's military and intelligence elite.
Okay, good cover story. So, excuse me. Didn't mean to make you deaf or my own self deaf. Sorry, I hit the wrong button here. But anyway, you can connect the dots if you want to. One and one is two, or one and one is not two. What do you think?
Thank you. together. We were on the ball. We did not believe.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malone.
It is about 22 past the hour. Now, let me demonstrate for you an exercise in insanity. All right? And how manipulation really, truly works. The story I just told you, credited to an Indian, South Asian news source, that a special death squad assassinated Benazir Bhutto on orders of former U.S. President Dick Cheney. And this is attributed to columnist Seymour Hersh. Also, that Ariel Sharon, then Prime Minister of Israel, is also a key man in the plot. And it came about because Benazir Bhutto let drop in an interview with David Frost for the BBC that Osama bin Laden had been assassinated by a Pakistan operative who had killed him. Right? Now, it's not true. Or is it? Pulitzer, according to RawStory.com, in a telephone conversation with RawStory, Seymour Hersh denied reports that he told an Arab television network that former Vice President Cheney ordered the assassination of Benazir Bhutto. Numerous internet and mainstream publications picked up the story today. Even the Wall Street Journal linked to unverified sources carrying the story. The U.S. conservative magazine, The American Spectator, also published a blog with the false information. Hersh told Raw Story that he made no such statement. He said, Alexa Casanos, director of public relations at New Yorker, speaking to Stephen Webster at Raw Story, said, quote, "We've tried to reach out to people in the media that we know and correct this. We're not even sure where this came from," end quote. Now, websites which appear to be based in India and Pakistan reported that Hersh made the allegations during an interview with an Arab television channel. Outlets which reported this include thenation.com.pk, no affiliation with the U.S. news magazine The Nation. The stories also falsely allege Hersh said that former Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon was key to the plot. The, oh, God. The only Arab television channel to interview Hersh recently is Gulf News, which spoke to him during the Arab Media Forum in Dubai. In the interview, Hersh does not even mention Bhutto's name, but does condemn former Vice President Cheney for running an executive assassination ring, which carried out operations all over the world. So, This is where we can see how this world or their world works. Hersh makes a rather clear and easily understandable allegation, and has proof to back it up that Dick Cheney was running an assassination squad. The proof is in the pudding, as they say. JSOC, Joint Special Operations Command, did in fact carry out assassinations, and it did in fact only answer to Dick Cheney. Now, when that story first came out 4 years ago, it was ignored. Nobody was supposed to pay any attention to it whatsoever, and like good dogs, the mainstream media didn't. It has only recently resurfaced again. Since it has resurfaced and starts getting the attention from bloggers, from internet writers, and it starts to inch its way up into mainstream media, something has to be done very quick. The story can't be denied. So how do you change everybody's perception? You change their perception of Seymour Hersh. How do you do that? You claim that Seymour Hersh said that Cheney ordered the assassination of Benazir Bhutto. Once a story is out there, it's almost impossible to get it back, because most, irreputable websites or news organizations may publish a retraction, they may not, but the story is out there. The story is out there. Seymour Hersh reporting that Dick Cheney ordered the assassination of Benazir Bhutto. And of course, the story is not true. Or is it? Which one is true? Which one is not true? As Hirsch says, no, I never said that in the interview. And the interview, when you listen to it, no, he doesn't say that. What Hirsch did say was that Cheney was the go-to guy where it concerns an assassination squad run by JSOC. But if you want to discredit Seymour Hirsch, then you put into mainstream media a story that is, well, outrageous, i.e., that Dick Cheney ordered the assassination of Benazir Bhutto. Once the story's out there, and then tomorrow the right-wingers can start ripping it to pieces, and who gets destroyed in the process? McChrystal? No. Cheney? No. Seymour Hirsch. From me. I know it's true. Oh, so true. 'Cause I saw it.
Defining anger management. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. So, is it clear how this works? Take a look at the clamor, the noise, the screaming, the frothing at the mouth. Especially by a piece of human waste like John Boehner, as he did on one of the Sunday talk shows, about Nancy Pelosi. Notice how that shifts. This is so easy. This is so easy to do when you have master manipulators at the top of the food chain like Cheney and his crew and every member of his crew. Don't forget, they all were well-versed in Joseph Goebbels, Heinrich Himmler. They understood full well the Nazi method of manipulating fear, anxiety, doubt, public opinion, mob mentality. It's all there. Much better. The Nazis did it so much better than the Soviets. It's so much better than anybody in history, the Nazis did. That's why the playbook for a lot of the techniques used by the Bush crime family was a playbook designed by the Nazis. The apparatus of the Bush crime family was very much like the Soviet apparatus, where you have a political operative inside every government agency, in our case, like the EPA or the FDA or the, whatever it is. You have either in charge or at a very high level to keep tabs on what that regulatory agency is doing, you have a political operative who only answers back to the commissar, and that would be Cheney. And Cheney, of course, answers only to Stalin or Brezhnev or Khrushchev himself, which is who? George Bush, maybe? Or is Cheney only answering to himself? But it is so easy to manipulate public opinion and shift the focus. You start with some little tiny incident, like whether or not Nancy Pelosi was briefed on such and such a day, what was said during the briefing, setting aside the fact that she is prohibited from making public these briefings. And up to this point, nobody really knows, to what degree Nancy Pelosi raised her voice inside the machine, you see. Now, the Republicans understand this, too. But Nancy Pelosi becomes the focal point. Not the torture, not Dick Cheney, not the murdering of people, not the assassination squads, not this gutting of whatever was left of American honor. No, 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 no. The focus of the story becomes Nancy Pelosi and whether or not she lied. To whom? When? About what? You see how easy this is? Seymour Hersh. Seymour Hersh has been getting away with just a bit too much, according, apparently, to the people at the top of the food chain. So how do you destroy Seymour Hersh? You put the story out, and you put it out in the South Asian press, you put it out in the American press, you put it out in the Middle Eastern press, that Seymour Hersh said in an interview that Dick Cheney ordered the assassination of Benazir Bhutto. When the story is revealed to be false by none other than Seymour Hersh himself, it's too late. The story's out there. So what does that make Seymour Hersh? Ah, just like Nancy Pelosi, a liar. So there is no reason any longer, truth seekers, to listen to anything Nancy Pelosi says or anything Seymour Hersh writes. Bada bing, bada boom. It's astonishing. It's incredible. Now let's see tomorrow what happens. The Pelosi story, much to the chagrin of the crazy right-wingers, is starting to abate, except for one area, and that's the mouth-breathing vampires on right-wing talk radio, the scum and the swine, who have their orders not to let the story die because it provides perfect smokescreen and cover and prevents mainstream media from going at the real, as if they would, the real story, which is Dick Cheney and the death squads, Dick Cheney and the torture rooms, Dick Cheney and the orders from Dick Cheney to find a link, no matter how much it costs, no matter who had to die, find me a goddamn link between, well, you know. Because the goal had nothing to do with Afghanistan. Nobody gave a damn about Afghanistan. The goal was Iraq. In the meantime, Cheney puts his daughter out there. This is how diabolical, or how good, you pick the word, Cheney really is. He has his daughter out there now. Huh? Stating categorically, she was on the weekend talk shows too, calling Barack Obama, just stopping short of calling him a traitor or someone engaged in treason. You see how this works? Well, I'm not trying to sound all slick on you. Of course you know how it works. I'm just citing a couple of examples over the past 24 hours, 48 hours, 96 hours. You see how easy it works? Of course you do. But, you see, you and I understand this. 85-90% of the American public doesn't. Not because they're necessarily stupid, they're willfully ignorant, yes, but because they just don't take time. What was in the Wall Street Journal? God damn, did you see this? Seymour Hersh said that Dick Cheney ordered the assassination of Benazir Bhutto. You're kidding. And then right-wing talk radio goes to work on the story and proves that Seymour Hersh is a senile, doddering liar. And he happens to be one of the best investigative journalists we have left in this country. Nancy Pelosi? Well, it's really rather easy, isn't it? As Andre calls, writes in, he calls it a different or the other kind of assassination. Yeah, you don't have to... You don't have to put a bullet in somebody's head to end their effectiveness, do you? God, I hate this. So anybody want to take a guess on what is real and what is not real? Do you want to try to figure it out? Huh? Did Cheney order the assassination of Bhutto? No, of course not. Was there a death squad that answered to Cheney? Well, all the evidence points to it. But if the first story is a lie, then the second story's got to be a lie too, right, Mike? Don't ask me, ask Rush Limbaugh. You see how easy it is? Seymour Hersh is a liar. Therefore, anything he's written is a lie. Yeah, but what about the stories he wrote about Abu Ghraib? What about the stories he wrote about me lie? Those are all true. Oh, but, you know, that was a long time ago. We're talking about now. Seymour Hersh is obviously crazy. He's senile. Have you seen a picture of him? My God, he must be what? 60? He's got to be. Meanwhile, the assassination squad that operated with Cheney's carte blanche, all they had to do was provide Cheney the information or the results of their efforts. That's all. Just let me know what happens. These are the people that I want eliminated. And let me know when and how. And just get it done as efficiently and as quickly as you can. That's all. That's all Cheney wanted. And General McChrystal, who handled ran JSOC, did he come in to that command position when Cheney operated as his own personal death squad, or did he come into that command position after Cheney operated it as his own personal death squad? And by the way, does anybody know where John Negroponte is? Remember him? So you can drive yourself crazy, can't you? You can drive yourself crazy trying to figure out, okay, what is real? Nothing is real. Reality is what a monster like Dick Cheney or the Bush crime family for the 8 years that they were in business, reality is what they declare is reality. It's very simple. Any opposition to the contrary, is meaningless. They decide what's real. You and I sit back and say, oh my God, did you see this? Oh my God, did you see that? And remember, Andre points out that Hirsch said many of his sources are secret or in the shadows. How reluctant will his sources be willing to talk to him now?
In hilltop level meetings at undisclosed locations to suspend the Constitution and sustain the corporation. Their minutes, notes, and memos can't be shared. And by the way, does anybody know the current whereabouts of Kenneth Lee? Oh, it's national security, of the public scrutiny, policy of legal coup d'etat. Oh, we have a shadow government. Imagine that.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you.
Oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Okay. Oh, my goodness. Oh, by the way, coming up at the bottom of the next hour, in about 40 minutes, we are going to play for you the second installment of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe that we played the first installment of it Friday night, if you'll remember, those of you who are sober enough, when we played it. The second part of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe, that episode, episode 5, will be brought to you in about a half an hour, so about 40 minutes. So stick around for that. Gingrich on torture. This is from PolitiFact.com. As we pointed out on this program, though, you know, the hypocrisy is knows no bounds with Newt Gingrich, the jerkwad that wrote the enemy's list and all the bad words and phrases to use. And people, you know, people get in my case for using son of a bitch or whatever. But anyway, without reiterating and recapping all this crap that Newt Gingrich has dumped into the political system, at issue now are Gingrich's comments on torture. And this is an issue because his comments now on these enhanced interrogations, i.e. torture conducted by the U.S., are not consistent with his comments from 12 years ago on torture in China. Back then, according to PolitiFact.com, Gingrich was House Speaker in 1997 when Chinese President Jiang Zemin visited the U.S. Gingrich was concerned about the prosecution of religious minorities in China. Sure he was. He was not, but that was what the Republican Party is and has put out there for so long. Oh, we care about religion. Sure you do. Anyway, he brought up religious minority persecution in China with Zheng, the Chinese president. And they talked about it. And then he released a statement about his meeting. Gingrich did. This is a part of what the statement said. Quote, Republican leaders made explicitly clear our unwavering commitment to human rights and individual liberty. I believe it was vitally important that we use this opportunity to address the basic lack of freedom, freedom of speech, liberty, assembly, and the press in China. As I said in China this spring, there is no place for abuse in what must be considered the family of man. There is no place for torture. There is no place for arbitrary detention. This is Newt Gingrich 12 years ago. Let me just do that again. Gingrich was concerned about the persecution of religious minorities in China, so he brought up the topic with the Chinese president at the time, Jiang Zemin. As I said in China this spring, Newt said, there's no place for abuse in what must be considered the family of man. There is no place for torture and arbitrary detention. There is no place for forced confessions. There is no place for intolerance of dissent. He goes on. While we walked through the Capitol Rotunda, I explained to President Zhang how the roots of American rule of law go back more than 700 years to the signing of the Magna Carta. End quote. Here's Gingrich now. He appeared on the Fox News Channel toilet show On the Record with Greta Van Susteren about a month ago, and he said he wasn't sure whether waterboarding was torture. He said, quote, I honestly don't know. I think it's debatable. Lawyers I respect a great deal say it is absolutely within the law. Other lawyers say it is absolutely not within the law. And then Gingrich explained that torture, waterboarding, might be warranted in extreme situations. He said, quote, I'm exactly where Senator McCain was. Senator McCain said there was very rare circumstances where extreme measures should be used, and those circumstances should be personally signed by the president as commander-in-chief. And a good example is if you pick up somebody who has planted a nuclear weapon in Washington or New York or Los Angeles or Atlanta, and you're trying to find out in the next 3 hours where is the nuclear weapon, the president of the United States may well authorize remarkably tough measures because 100,000 or 500,000 lives are at stake, end quote. Don't you just love that scenario? Isn't that getting a little bit overdone? Somebody planted a nuclear weapon. Oh, my God. And guess what? We caught him. Huh? We got him. So to measure the flip-flop, Gingrich in the past took an absolute posture on prisoner treatment, saying, quote, there is no place for abuse in what must be considered the family of man. There is no place for torture. There is no place for forced confession. Now he appears to say, well, you know, if we are acting out a script from the TV show 24, if somebody has slipped a nuclear bomb into the United States and delivered that nuclear bomb to a really cool, slick hiding place, the bomb, a nuclear bomb, nuclear weapon, and we happen to catch him, we catch the nuclear weapon placer. We do. We catch him somehow. We don't catch the bomb, but we catch him. You figure it out. But anyway, we got him. So do we have the right to torture him? Why, sure we do. Because 500,000 or 100,000 or 20 people's lives are at stake, right? 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 And the average human being will answer back, well, I guess so. Yeah. But when you stop and think about it, A, such a scenario is practically impossible. B, who has been conducting the kinds of operations against innocent people in which 500,000 or 1,000,000 people have been killed? You can have the break or the top of the hour to come up with the answer for that. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is about 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. Talk about weirdness. And that's about all we do on this program because we spent 8 years living in this nightmarish Bush crime family scenario. And I'm more or less drifting around to the school of thought that the Bush administration was not incompetent. I'm not talking about Bush himself. He was the figurehead. They really did come to Washington to steal and loot and pillage and destroy. This is not about incompetence. This is not about misdirection. It's not about anything other than a conscious, willful decision to end the United States as we know it and replace it with something else that would benefit them, I guess. But the stories are out there all over the place now that Rumsfeld may be the real Nosferatu where it concerns war. Well, Cheney wasn't the only demon. I think we need to get this in our minds. Again, at Raw Story, GQ.com is the Wall Street Journal online. But GQ.com has this rather lengthy story about how Donald Rumsfeld understood George Bush to the same extent that Dick Cheney did. That George Bush was a goof, you know, just a complete idiot, a twerp who, you know, if you would have handed him a map of the world and said, find Afghanistan, he wouldn't know which hemisphere to look in. But according to the reports that are out there, less than a month after U.S. and coalition forces invaded Iraq back in 2003, Bush got something called a worldwide intelligence update with the following quote on the cover. This was a briefing to let him know what was going on in the world. On the cover, above photos of a cheering Iraqi crowd in newly liberated Baghdad, was this quote. Behold, the eye of the Lord is on those who fear him, to deliver their soul from death. Now, 1 week earlier, on April 3rd, 2003, another of these reports reached Bush, and its cover contained a passage from the book of Proverbs, quote, "Commit to the Lord whatever you do, and your plans will succeed," end quote. Now, revelations of these top-secret briefings containing explicit Christian messages and quotations appeared today, or yesterday, actually, on GQ Magazine's website. You can get there by going to GQ.com if you want to. Robert Draper is the Texan journalist who wrote this lengthy article for GQ. He's also wrote an authorized biography of George W. Bush called Dead Certain. And he obtained the cover sheets of these memos from former Bush administration, a former Bush administration official. I wonder who that would be, right? This is what he writes. Draper writes this. These cover sheets were the brainchild of Major General Glenn Schaefer, a director for intelligence, serving both the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the Secretary of Defense. In the days before the Iraq War, General Schaefer's staff had created humorous covers in an attempt to alleviate the stress of preparing for battle. Then, as the body count began, Schaefer, who is an evangelical Christian, the general, deemed the biblical passages more suitable. End quote. Now, the Bible quotes that were placed on these report were placed on the reports in part because Rumsfeld wanted to forge a connection with his boss, the boy genius George W. Bush. Draper writes, quote, "Publicly flaunting his own religious views was not at all Rumsfeld's style, but it was decidedly Bush's style, and Rumsfeld likely saw the scriptures as a way of making a personal connection with a president who frequently quoted the Bible," end quote, Robert Draper. And according to Ross' story, Rumsfeld was intensely disliked by many high-level Bush administration officials who wished he had been fired long before he actually was, Draper reports. Draper writes, quote, "Though few of these individuals would speak for the record, knowing that their former boss, George W. Bush, would not approve of it, they believe that Rumsfeld's actions epitomized the very traits, arrogance, stubbornness, obliviousness, ineptitude, that critics say drove the Bush presidency off the rails." Okay, but what they're leaving out is the absolute quality of evil that Dick Cheney brought. A Louisiana newspaper notes that the GQ report is also quoting an unnamed former Bush administration official as blaming former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld for many failures, including a delay in military assistance in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. Draper writes in the GQ report, quote, "3 years later, when I asked a top White House official how he would characterize Rumsfeld's assistance in the response to Hurricane Katrina, I found out why. Quote, it was commonly known in the West Wing that there was a battle with Rumsfeld regarding this," said the official. "I can't imagine another defense secretary throwing up the kinds of obstacles he did," end quote. Though various military bases had been mobilized into a state of alert well before the advance team's tour, Rumsfeld's aversion to using active duty troops was evident. One of Bush's closest advisors says today, quote, "There's no doubt in my mind that Rumsfeld didn't like the concept." The next day, end quote, 3 days after landfall, the hurricane, word of disorder in New Orleans had reached a fever pitch. According to sources familiar with the conversation, Department of Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff called Rumsfeld that morning and said, quote, "You're going to need several thousand troops," end quote. Rumsfeld answered, quote, "Well, I disagree. And I'm going to tell the president we don't need any more than the National Guard," end quote. Now, the Times-Picayune newspaper in New Orleans today writes, after the president had returned to the White House, he eventually convened a meeting in the Situation Room to discuss the government's response. Bush barked, Rumsfeld, what the hell is going on down there? Are you watching what's on television? Is that the United States of America or some third world nation I'm watching? What the hell are you doing? When Rumsfeld mentioned his concerns about unity of command issues, Bush stopped talking to his defense secretary and directed all inquiries to Lieutenant General Honore via video screen, who was on the ground in Louisiana. Now, Robert Draper reports the following, quote, "But still the troops hadn't arrived, and by Saturday morning," says General Honore, quote, "we had dispersed all of these people across Louisiana, so we needed more troops to go to distribution centers, to feed people, to maintain traffic." That morning, Bush convened yet another meeting in the Situation Room. Chertoff was emphatic. "Mr. President," he said, "if we're not going to begin to get these troops, we're not going to be able to get the job done." Rumsfeld could see the writing on the wall and had come prepared with the deployment plan in hand, Draper reports. Still, he did not volunteer it. Only when Bush ordered, "Don, do it," did he acquiesce and send in the troops, a full 5 days after the hurricane hit. I mean, that's the end of story in Raw Story, the end of the part I'm going to quote from it. But where do you determine that not incompetence, but insanity, I mean, mental disease ended and Bush administration policies began? Or is there no break? I mean, what we're finding out now is beyond insane. This was how this country was run for 8 years.
Lay under your palm trees, I look to the eyes of the Indian who lay on the bed of bending step. A total range finder over the hill, I saw the frontline boys talking their pills. Sick of the mess they find on their desert stage, and the bravery of being out of range. Yeah, the question is best. Oh man, what the hell are you gonna kill next? Oh time, who are you gonna kill next?
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
It is 21 past the hour. And if you'd like to call in and comment about this, we'd love to have you do so. After the next break, we're going to do part two of the episode. Well, you know, Kathy makes a joke about how my brain doesn't work anymore, but, you know, trying to figure this stuff out, right? Don't you feel the same way? Don't you feel like you're on the verge? I'm talking to you, gentle listener, right on the verge of absolute chaos inside your head. If you try to make sense out of any of this stuff, the best thing to do, I guess, for mental balance or sanity is just turn around, walk away from it. I mean, don't walk away from this program. You know, I'll go ahead and, put up with this so that you can tune in once a night without the visuals, just you and me in your mind. And, you know, we talk about this, but it is truly madness. Now, I'm willing to do this for 25 cents a program if you want to download the podcast. Oh my God. He actually slipped that in there, didn't he? But. In trying to keep things straight, in trying to figure out who did what, to whom, when, what was the rationale, what was the reason, it really is something that you wouldn't think would be necessary in a country like ours at this point in our history, would you? I mean, this stuff is, this is like Italian politics in the 13th century. This is like, I don't know, working around the Emperor of China in the 9th century. This is crazy. It's palace intrigue, and who can slice off whose head? And oh, my God. Our military affairs correspondent writes in and says, if there is a ticking time bomb, and we do catch the person who has planted that bomb, will we have time to waterboard him 183 times to find out where he planted the bomb? Sharon writes, the obvious reference being, if they tried 183 times on Sheikh Khalid or Khalid Sheikh Mohammed or whoever it was to get him to give up information that didn't exist, and all he had to say, all he had to do was scream, yes, O'Brien, I see five fingers, not four. I do, I see five. That's all he had to do, and he didn't. So doesn't that trash the whole ticking time bomb scenario? John in Los Angeles writes, all the person being tortured has to do is endure the torture for 3 hours because he knows that the bomb will go off in 3 hours. And he won't reveal the location, period. And let me add my little codicil to all this. If somebody is willing to commit suicide, i.e. suicide bombers, people who drive trucks and cars or their own human bodies loaded with dynamite and ball bearings and explosives into a crowd of people, what makes somebody like Dick Cheney think that if somebody has planted a nuclear bomb, which means the whole goddamn country or a good part of it is going to be annihilated, including the bomber, what makes Dick Cheney's rat-infested mind think that torturing this person is going to make them say, oh, okay, game off. The bomb is on the corner of Madison Avenue and 72nd Street in the basement of a brownstone. Give me a goddamn break here. These people, the Cheney crowd, is crazy. They're all mad. They are. Ticking time bomb to justify torture? I see. You see, that's why this is out here. That's why this part of it has been out here now for months. Well, Mike, you know, this is what every right-winger will tell you. What about the ticking time bomb? What about if somebody comes here and plants a nuclear weapon? What would you do, Malloy? Just let them go? Read them their rights? Offer them a cup of tea? The whole goddamn country's going to be blown up with nuclear weapons, and you wouldn't torture! But you moron, you right-wing, ant-addled jerkwad, someone who plants a nuclear bomb, you really think you can torture that person into telling you where? Oh, my God! But in the comic book world of madness and insanity and headless people and explosions where Dick Cheney and Rumsfeld and Bush and the rest of these sick bastards have lived all their lives and then foisted it on us the past 8 years, that person would tell where the nuclear bomb is ticking away. You see? And then what? We go defuse it.
The Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
It's about 25 before the hour. This is the Malloy program. One last email, and then we're going to play the second part of the two-parter of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe that we started Friday. This would be episode 5 if you're keeping track. This is from Mike in Golden, Colorado, I guess. Hey, Mike, I'm quite prepared to believe that Cheney did order the assassination of Benazir Bhutto. Why not? It has the exact combination of great evil and great stupidity that characterizes all his acts. So smearing Hirsch is a double bluff. Not only does it harm Seymour Hirsch's reputation, it attempts to inoculate the public from ever treating the possibility seriously. In other words, the real truth could be that Hirsch did not make any such claim, and Cheney did order the assassination of Bhutto. Let's viral that. Well, yeah, I mean... That's the part that is maddening. No matter what scenario one wants to come up with regarding what these bastards have done, it is plausible. Whether it is an action secret double cross or triple play or. Don't forget what these thugs said early on. I forget which member of the Bush crime family said, we create our own reality. And by the time he was referring to the media, and by the time you people catch up to the reality we've created, I'm paraphrasing, we've gone on and created a brand new one. These people had not the least bit of interest in the truth. The only interest they had was in power. And to do what they came to Washington to do, and that was to utterly and absolutely smash this country into a million pieces and snatch and grab all they could grab. And they did. And here we are. Let's take a break and check in with Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe.
From Hollywood, the Jimmy Durante Show.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Now, have you heard the news?
It's time once again for another episode of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. Tonight, the thrilling conclusion to Death in the Land of the Midnight Sun or Fool's Gold. You remember last time Mike was tipped off that Sarah Palin was going to be the Republican nominee for vice president days before the actual announcement. He flew up to Alaska to interview her before the rest of the mainstream media got the story. As soon as Palin realized he wasn't a lackey from Fox News, but an actual reporter, she had him beaten, drugged, and smuggled aboard a private jet flying toward a secret rendezvous with the mysterious Mr. Moneybags. Let's listen in, shall we?
I came to as the jet was making its final descent. My hands were tied, so I couldn't place my seat back and put the tray in an upright position. Looks like I missed out on the complimentary beverage and bag of pretzels, too. Damn, not my lucky day. Just then, Palin popped up like a deranged jack-in-the-box in the seat in front of me.
Isn't this exciting, Mr. Mahoney? Our own private jet. You know, when I was a little girl, I always wanted to be a stewardess.
Well, sometimes ambition has to take a back seat to the higher calling of serving your country, right?
Isn't that the truth? I was just telling my husband, Spot, the other day the exact same thing.
Hey, just between us, Toots, do you have any idea what a vice president does?
Oh, all that BP talk all the time. I tell you, I still can't answer that question until someone answers for me what it is exactly the VP does every day. I guess the vice president's job is probably a lot like the president's, just do what that great American patriot Dick Cheney tells us to do. Well, here's where you get off, Mr. Madigan. I've got to scoot back home for my press conference. There's just a million things I've got to do. I got to shop, pick out clothes, my hair,
a couple of goons
nails.
Hustled me off the plane and into one of the largest limos I've ever seen. We drove into the industrial part of the city. I don't have a clue which city. Abandoned warehouses all look alike to me. We stopped at the one that had a guard stationed in front of it. The big doors opened. We drove in, and one of the goons threw me out of the car. They backed up and drove away as the warehouse doors closed, leaving me in the dark. It wasn't the first time. Even though I couldn't see anything, I had the sneaking suspicion I wasn't alone.
Feed me now!
Yeah, I wasn't alone, all right. But who or what was in here with me? Someone was coming towards me. Then the lights came on. In front of me was a large vat, some sort of hoist, a shadowy figure over by the wall. And there standing next to the vat was Mr. Moneybags himself, Richard Mellon Scaife.
So glad you could join us, Mr. Malloy. Cordell, could you please attach Mr. Malloy to the hoist and suspend him over the vat?
What's your part in the scape?
I pay for things, Mr. Malloy. I make things happen. And sometimes I make sure things don't happen. Like you're getting in my way.
Feed me now!
What the hell is down there?
You should know. You're the one who reduced Rush Limbaugh to a pool of liquid putrescence. It's almost feeding time.
So you expect me to talk?
No, Mr. Malloy. I expect you to die.
How rich are you anyway?
Let's just say that if I was walking down the street and saw a $100 bill on the sidewalk, I'd be losing money in the time it would take me to bend down and pick it up.
Then why are you doing this? How much better can you eat? What can you buy that you can't already afford?
I'm not doing this for me, Mr. Malloy. This is for the future.
Yeah? Whose future?
Well, mine. So I guess I am doing this for me and the people who run this country and the people who are going to continue to run this country.
Not if I have anything to say about it.
Well, you can rant all you want for the next 30 minutes, then you'll slowly be lowered into the vat. It's a pity I won't be here for that.
What's the matter, fat cat? Squeamish?
Not really. It's just that Rush gets a little gassy when he's eating. Kind of unpleasant. Good evening, Mr. Malloy. Have fun becoming part of the Borg. Come, Cordell. We can't keep our other dinner guests waiting.
I looked over at the clock to see how much longer I had to live. Below, I could almost swear I could see the Limbaugh amoeba licking its non-existent lips. And then, the only person in the world I never expected to see came out from the shadows.
Hello, Malloy.
Kathy, what are you doing here? This is a flashback.
Well, I could go back home and wait for you to finish the story, but I can't see how you're going to get out of this without a little help.
Okay, look, as long as you're here, you might as well help me then. Not today, Cupcake.
Got a plan on getting out of here?
Simple. All we have to do is break out, overpower the guard, grab his keys, steal his car, get to an airport, and fly home before I finish the story. Piece of cake.
Well, then let's get going. I just remembered I forgot to feed the dog.
The dog?
Never mind.
Be sure to tune in again when Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe, once again takes on the flying monkey ride in Whom the Gods Wish to Destroy, They First Drive Mad.
And now, back to our regularly scheduled program. Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe, written and produced by Bob Alexander and performed by the Mighty Malloy Radio Players. Phone calls. Nora is calling from Minneapolis, listening on KTNF. Hey, Nora. Is Nora there? Okay, I guess Nora's not there. Rob is calling from Burlington, Iowa, listening on Sirius. Rob, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mike. Good to get me right on. Hey, to be honest with you, I've never had listened to your show before. I was just going through the dials, and I got that statement you were talking about Cheney ordering the assassination of Bhutto. Out of curiosity, what's the end game in him for doing that from your perspective?
Well, you must not have been listening through the whole thing. I spent the next 15 minutes explaining how apparently the story is not true, or maybe it is, but nobody really knows. The person to whom the story was attributed, which, by the way, was not Mike Malloy, but was Seymour Hersh, has disavowed and denied that he ever said that.
Okay. Well, I mean, what I caught from your perspective is that you think that's a possibility.
Oh, very much so, because one of the things that Seymour Hersh has written about is that the Joint Special Operations Command, JSOC, was operated by Cheney as a private assassination ring. And that is kind of a matter that has been leaking out for some time. The fact that Cheney ran it is what makes the story new. So, you know, if somebody will run an assassination ring, Rob, it's not whether or not they have people assassinated. It's who do they have people assassinated. That makes sense to me. Thanks, Rob. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. I think we have Nora back in Minneapolis. Hey, Nora.
Hey there, Mike. I'm so sorry I was trying to rush back from the other room, but now I'm back.
There you are.
I wanted to say this. You know, I don't know if anyone has heard of a time when the CIA does tell the truth. Personally, all I've ever heard is stories of massacre and cover-up, assassination, cover-up, etc.
Right.
But when it comes to Nancy Pelosi and they're all screaming that she didn't complain during the time of September and October of 02,
mm-hmm.
and guess who was? Our beloved senator from Minnesota, Paul Wellstone, was complaining and putting up opposition at that time, and he ended up in the spirit world.
Yeah.
And they refused to let them investigate it as a crime, so whether it was or wasn't a crime, we are not supposed to be able to find out.
Isn't that odd?
What does Dick Cheney know about this?
You know, what you said there, your first comment, the CIA went from being an intelligence gathering operation after World War II to become the premier assassination ring on Earth. It became a terrorist organization by anyone's definition. And Nora, I have to leave it there because your phone is messing up here and it's just playing hell with our dials. I'm sorry. Maybe a landline might work a little bit better next time if you have one. But thanks for checking in, Nora. You make some good points. But the CIA is, in fact, and has been for a good 50 years, if not longer, a terrorist organization. I mean, how else do you define terror? The fact that it happens to be our terrorist organization makes it okay to certain people who run this government. And those certain people are Democrats and Republicans who have been in power since the CIA was put together. Yes, what the CIA does is very secretive, but pick a number, 60%, 70%, 80% of their budget is off the books. Nobody ever knows. However, it is up to the people that we elect to into the House and the Senate to demand, and if they don't get the answers, to just bring the whole house of cards down, whether their jobs are lost or not. But they don't do that. To say that bureaucrats, which is all the CIA is run by, bureaucrats, that's all any agency of the U.S. government is run by, bureaucrats. Come on, it doesn't make any difference what the agency is. But to say that the bureaucrats have some sort of a firewall between them And the people who control the purse strings to keep the bureaucracy running, give me a goddamn break. That doesn't have to happen unless the people who control the purse strings are elected, are selected and elected to do just that. Keep their mouths shut and keep the money flowing. That's, I mean, that's so obvious, isn't it? If we had real reformers, if we had real representatives of the people in the House and or the Senate, other than the handful that we do have, and we do have a handful, yes, absolutely. But if the majority, if not the entirety of the House and the Senate, were there as the legislative branch of government, of the people, by the people, and for the people, then such things as the overthrowing of foreign governments, the assassination of foreign leaders, the destabilizing of economies, the ruining of foreign currencies, all the terrorist activities that the United States CIA has been involved in for over half a century would not occur. It just simply would not occur. We have three branches of government, not four. I mean, that's the way it was set up. The fourth branch is not supposed to be the bureaucracy. Now, obviously, it has become just that. But we have legislative, judicial, and executive. And the legislative really has the power because they have the power of the purse. They decide who's going to get paid and who isn't. It's not the executive or the judicial. This is so simple. So, to name the CIA as a terrorist organization is a simple matter. You look at its published history. You look at what you know about it. There's no way of knowing what else they've done. But what this operation, this bureaucracy has done that we are aware of over the past 50 years shakes out by any definition, whether it is Bush's or the dictionaries or Machiavelli's or Mao Zedong, it doesn't matter whose definition. The definitions are there. This is a terrorist organization. It commits extrajudicial assassination. Well, I'm not going to go down the list again. But it is a terrorist organization. How do you stop it? You cut off the money. I mean, Jesus Christ, that's not hard. You cut off the money. And then, of course, efforts are made. This is what happened during Iran-Contra. The government of the United States, the legislative branch, with the Boland Amendment, cut off the money to fund the CIA operation known as the Contras. There were no Contras. These were Nicaraguans who had been sympathetic to the Somoza regime, but they were put together as a counter-revolutionary force by the CIA. It was a CIA invention. And it was too soon after the Church Committee hearings and the laws that were passed. So the Boland Amendment was passed and said, no, no more funding. And if you fund this organization, you're violating the law. So what happened? Oliver North decided to sell TOW missiles to the Iranians while they were holding Americans hostage. Son of a bitch! Think about that. It goes on and on and on. If you don't know this history, you should. This is your country, your secret police, and your terrorist organization funded with your dollars. Well, up until recently, now it's funded with Chinese dollars, so to speak. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. Welcome back. It is about 7 past the hour. In just a second here, we're going to play for you from The View today. Elizabeth Hasselbeck, who is a clear example of people in media, she is, who have been completely brainwashed by their own ignorance. We're going to play it for you in a second. I got an email here from Steve the banker, who writes regarding the CIA as a torture organization, as a terrorist organization. Steve writes, now you're talking about the most important issue of my life, and I'm 53, and all of us who were born after World War II. The intelligence agencies of this nation, the CIA, and how they stole the foreign policy decision-making from the U.S. Senate, and from the 1940s onward, have done the long list of things. And in the book Legacy of Ashes by New York Times writer Tim Weisner, this is what it has been all about. We can bomb Vietnamese villages off the face of the planet, and killing Iraqis in the middle of the night. We can kill people in 40 countries at the same time and overthrow half of them. And yet the American public is not told the full truth of how we have made so many suffer. To what end? Yeah, Legacy of Ashes is a good book by Tim Weisner, W-E-I-S-N-E-R. If you get a chance to Google it, Legacy of Ashes. It's difficult to comprehend. But we have been so conditioned, haven't we, to not question, just not question. The last generation that truly, truly, truly questioned was the generation that was coming of age in the 60s. Whether you like that fact or not is really immaterial. It is the truth. There was an attempt to rekindle that sort of activism within the 70s, the anti-nuke movement. There was an attempt that got even smaller and more less centralized, more local in the 80s during the Reagan years. I can remember attempts to organize demonstrations against the killing and murder that we were perpetrating in Nicaragua. And with the exception of, by then, the former hippies from the 60s who are now in their, in the 80s, were now in their mid-40s, there was just no interest. Remember what the 80s were. The greed generation. The 90s, forget about it. Now? Well, we had one big effort, didn't we, in late 2002, early 2003, 10 million people globally, a couple of million in this country. And, of course, it was totally ineffective. And once we realized that public demonstrations were ineffective, we stopped. Full stop. So. Jesse Ventura, we played something. Oh, that's right. Larry King show the other night. Ventura is really making the rounds. He was on ABC's The View today. And he gave co-host Elizabeth Hasselbeck, and isn't she a piece of work, a lesson or two about the torture technique known as waterboarding. This is from the broadcast today. I believe it's today. Yeah, May the 18th. this is a little bit longer than the normal soundbite that we play for you, but we want you to hear this. Jesse Ventura and the right-wing twit is Elizabeth Hasselbeck.
I know your mind is pretty made up about waterboarding, correct? You were waterboarding as part of your Navy SEAL training, correct?
Well, it wasn't part of Navy SEAL training. It was part of what they call SEER school, yes. Survival, Escape, Resistance, Evasion. It's, yep. It's a school they required you to go to prior to the combat zone of Vietnam. And yes, we were all waterboarded there, and yes, it is torture.
What do you think about Nancy Pelosi in terms of what she has been claiming with the CIA, lying to
Congress? I think what's worse is this, the fact that it happened. If we hadn't waterboarded to begin with, none of this would be a controversy, would it?
If we hadn't waterboarded...
Torture is torture. If you're going to be a country that follows the rule of law, which we are, torture is illegal.
But these were specifically approved techniques with KSM,
approved
okay?
By who?
Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the information we extracted from him before waterboarding was zip. Afterward,
no,
he released the information.
Got all of it before waterboarding.
Yes. This was a case
and
that was used three times.
The point is this. Specific. All right, wait a minute. If waterboarding is okay.
Do you want me to put that, you in
the
pool, Nelson?
Wait. If waterboarding's okay, then why don't we let our police do it to suspects so they can learn what they know?
I'll follow that question again.
If waterboarding's okay, why didn't we waterboard McVeigh and Nichols, the Oklahoma City bombers, to find out if there were more people involved?
What's your answer to that? Why didn't we? Why didn't we?
Well, I don't know. We only seem to waterboard Muslims.
One of the things that's coming out now is that they were waterboarding them to get a connection between Iraq and Al-Qaeda, and that the reason they waterboarded was to get information about so that they could justify their invasion of Iraq.
What do you think is going to happen?
How does that work into your theory on how great it is?
Look, I'm not saying it's great, okay? I'm not saying, hey, everybody, let's go next door and get waterboarded. I'm concerned right now about Nancy Pelosi, who was supposedly briefed as it's been.
She lied. They want her out now, right?
Because she lied?
Sure.
Well,
why
didn't they ask for Bush and Cheney to go out when they lied about why we went into Iraq?
Senator Clinton, Hillary Clinton was right there with them as
the
we're
point
getting
is,
Democrats.
Nothing's going to happen because they're all involved. Yeah. The Dems and Repubs are both involved. Yeah, that's why President Obama's backing off from it.
They're
not going to do it now. It's a good thing I'm not the president. I'm an independent because I would prosecute the people who did it. I would prosecute the people who ordered it, and they would all go to jail.
Would you prosecute President Obama in the future going backwards when he ordered the killing of the Somali pirates? I mean, you have to think about
everything
that's
going on. Vegetables and oranges. You're not talking about someone in custody who is supposedly under. Okay, how would we feel? Look how outraged we were when waterboarding was done to our vets in Vietnam.
Amen.
Where do you think we learned it from? And we created the Hanoi Hilton right in Guantanamo. That's our Hanoi Hilton. People have died there. People are tortured there. I'm ashamed of my country.
People aren't basing, all those extremists are not basing their behaviors on ours. I can guarantee that. They are out to get us.
Should we stoop to their level?
No, we
should be above them.
Absolutely.
Torture is wrong.
But enhanced interrogation
is Dick Cheney changing a word.
Dick Cheney
comes up with a new word to cover his ass.
You come up with a new word. New question.
I said it before. You give me a waterboard 1 hour and Dick Cheney, and I'll have him confessing to the Sharon Tate murders.
Yeah, baby.
In 1 hour.
Elizabeth Hasselbeck, I mean, the depth of her ignorance is only about an inch, because that is, her intellect is about an inch and a quarter. But the statement, I don't know if you could hear it in the screechy back and forth, but when she said the information before torture was zip, and after torture is when we got all the information. And the people who conducted the torture have come forth and said, look, we really didn't get anything, except when we used enhanced interrogation methods. But Elizabeth Hasselbeck sits there on this program. Thank God Jesse Ventura was there to, smack her down, figuratively speaking, a couple of times. What a moron. And ABC keeps her on, huh?
I kept waiting for her to say, you want torture? I was on Survivor. I'm a survivor. We went 40 days without a shower. I ate rice. I lost 9 pounds. That was torture. You should send them all to Survivor.
Was she on Survivor?
You didn't know that?
No, I don't know where she came from.
She was on, I think, season 2, I believe, of Survivor.
Oh, I had no idea.
You know, Survivor, I don't have any nail polish.
I thought her claim to fame was she was married to a professional football star or something.
That was after Survivor.
Oh, she is married to a professional football star.
I have no idea.
I don't either.
I just know she was on Survivor and she lost some weight and she didn't win, but she was like Miss Third Runner Up and bitched a lot because, you know, they didn't shower and had to eat peanut butter and rice. There's some torture.
We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Carolyn is calling from Austin, Texas, listening on XM. Hey, Carolyn.
Hey, Mike. Just wanted to say how much I appreciate the show.
Well, thank you.
And I'm glad to hear that you're reading Robert Draper's piece on your show. And I think he's a good guy. And I hope, as a Texan, that he can sort of redeem, you know, redeem us Texans. By staying on it.
Yeah, well, I hear what you're saying. I don't think Texans need to be redeemed. I think people around the country understand that George W. Bush doesn't represent every Texan any more than Rick Perry represents every Texan.
But still, it's pretty painful, though. There were several writers that were out there trying to tell everybody what was going to happen before Bush was elected.
Right.
Molly Ivins and Lou DuBose and
right.
some of those people. And, you know, there were people who knew that it was going to be a horrible disaster.
Well, I guess that's what I mean. Back in 98, 99, when Bush was running, I used to use Molly Ivins as a great source. Matter of fact, I think I had her on once, at least twice, at least once on WLS, and quoted a lot from articles written about Bush in Texas Monthly, and made the same point that Bush would be a disaster for the country. It's just that nobody, it's clear now, nobody realized the degree that he would bring this country into utter chaos, everything about it, because the people who put him there were there to destroy everything that had built the middle class, that had gotten respect for the United States. They were there to smash, snatch, and grab. And, boy, didn't they do a damn good job, Carolyn?
They looted.
Everything.
And did you know that Robert Draper is Leon Jaworski's grandson?
I didn't know that.
So he may have a unique education,
yeah.
Sort of, you know, learned some of his skill at his grandpa's knee.
That's very true.
And have you seen him on TV? Have you seen Robert Draper on TV?
No, not yet.
Well, he's a real charming guy. He's very disarming, very nice demeanor. He's pretty sharp.
Well, I'm only getting to know him through what he's written for GQ, and you know the entire thing is posted online, and it is it's a fascinating and at the same time scary as hell to read this stuff. Hey, Carolyn, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Michael is calling from the Bronx in New York. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. Good to talk to you again.
My pleasure.
All right. What I was about to talk to you about was about Nancy Pelosi. But before I get to that, you know, it's funny you play Elizabeth Hasselbeck because I saw another clip in which she would have just gotten on your nerves. Lord knows she got on my nerves. When she's busy, what in the world was she doing? She was talking about President Obama laughing at some jokes that was made towards, I think, Rush Limbaugh or Dick Cheney, and she had a problem with that. And then I'm thinking, like, well, she sure as hell didn't have a problem with George W. Bush making jokes about, no weapons of mass destruction here
right.
while troops are dying overseas. She thought that was funny.
Well, I think Elizabeth Hasselbeck has to be seen in the context of what she is. She's a cute woman who is controversial because of her ignorance and her shrillness, and she has found a niche on a daytime program on ABC that I don't think, except for the eek and geek factor, I don't think anybody really takes The View very seriously. There are a couple of people on there who I certainly appreciate. Whoopi Goldberg is one. Barbara Walters is another.
Enjoy Behar.
Well, I'm not familiar with the program because, you know, I don't watch, the only time I turn on television during the day is to see what kind of murder and mayhem is going on. I usually go to CNN or MSNBC for that, but, I've seen enough of the clips and, to know what the program's about. But I think that Elizabeth Hasselbeck is representative of a very serious illness in this country, Michael, and that is the willingness to be completely misled, to be completely duped, and to remain willfully ignorant of everything that's going on. I think every time she opens her mouth, it's clear she didn't have a clue what's going on. She is very obvious, is an ardent fan of Sean Hannity and or Rush Limbaugh and or all these right wingers who infest New York City talk radio. I doubt if she gets her information from any source other than New York talk radio, and it's all right wing. So listen, Michael, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us.
You know that life is short, talk is cheap. Don't be making promises that you can't keep. If you don't like this little song I'm singing, just grin and bear it. All I can say is if the shoe fits, wear it, and you must keep talking. Please try to make it rhyme. Because your mind is on vacation and your mouth is working every time.
Doing talk radio right from the left, it's More Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. This is the Malloy program. Dave is calling from Minneapolis, listening on KTNF. Hey, Dave.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
All right. How are you?
Good. I got to tell you, I really appreciate your show, and I've been listening for a couple of years anyway.
Thank you.
And anyway, I was thinking about the Seymour Hersh thing and the Dick Cheney and all that, and seems like Seymour Hersh has this book coming out that's maybe a year and a half away, and it's wondering if maybe Dick isn't doing a little book assassination, so to speak, you know, to try to mute what's going on with the book.
Well,
another thing I had was when Benazir Bhutto went back to Pakistan, seems to me she was encouraged to go back there by Condoleezza Rice.
I seem to remember that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and then another little thing, you know, Dick's always talking about this this nuclear explosion that's going to happen someplace, you know, because we're not waterboarding people.
Mm-hmm.
Wondering, has there been an accounting of the nukes that went from Minot to Barksdale down in Louisiana?
Whenever I come across that story, ever since it first developed, I guess about a year or so ago, maybe a little bit longer, it's never made clear whether or not the weapons were returned. There were, I guess, three or four nuclear bombs or nuclear devices with the triggers had been set that were flown across the country, which meant simply if the plane had crashed, there would have been a quadruple nuclear explosion someplace, I guess. Most of the people involved in that have since committed suicide. I don't know what happened to the bombs or devices themselves. I have no idea. I would not be the least bit surprised, Dave, to find out that Dick Cheney, somebody as immoral, not immoral, but amoral as Dick Cheney, somebody as, evil, just purely and simply, he is an evil, evil man. Would not have in his possession somewhere, now, I don't mean in basement of his house, but somewhere access to a weapon of mass destruction, whether it would be a nuclear device, some sort of bio agent, some sort of chemical agent. Dick Cheney is one of those people that occasionally shows up in history, either in this country or in another country, who is essentially a destroyer. There is nothing, absolutely nothing positive or life-affirming about Dick Cheney. There just isn't. His offspring seem to be the same way, especially Elizabeth Cheney, who seems bound and determined to out-creep her father. I mean, she's a very creepy. This is not an ad feminem attack. I think she is just vile. But there's something creepy about her appearance, just like there is always something creepy about Cheney's appearance, about her old man's appearance. So it would not surprise me at all to find out, if we ever do, that Cheney had and has access, either directly or indirectly, to any sort of murderous device anywhere on Earth that he would want to put his hands on. Absolutely. Dave, thanks. Let me move on. I appreciate you checking in. Oh, as far as publicity, adverse publicity about Cy Hirsch's book, remember what adverse publicity does. It makes sure that a book or a movie or a play is going to be seen or read. And I don't doubt for a second that right-wingers still don't understand that when they attack something that has been written by someone who is normal, to the degree that you can be normal in this country now. We have one open line here if you want to get in on the conversation. The number is 877-996-2556. Charles is calling from Easton, Connecticut. Hey, Charles, welcome to the program.
Hi, a long time since we've talked.
Well, welcome back.
There seems to be a disconnect with the right wing in their attacking Pelosi, who I think, you know, on both parts, A, she's telling the truth, and B, also so is the CIA, because they weren't going to hold the bag for it. That's why you hired the mercenaries to do it. But the right wing is saying it never happened. How dare you say it happened? And it's all Nancy's fault. Therefore, they don't seem to realize they've just confessed to a crime again.
That who has?
The Republican. He said it never happened. It never happened. They spent years and years and years saying, how dare you say that? We would never do it. Butter wouldn't melt in her mouth. And now they're saying, oh, it's all because of Nancy. She's the one who did it. And they're saying, oh, whoa, yes, of course it happened, but it kept us safe, but it's a crime, and Nancy did it. So they've just admitted to a crime.
Well, yeah, but I think what you're doing, Charles, and it's understandable because I'm sure you're much more normal than the average right-winger or neocon or whatever the hell we're going to refer to him now. You're attributing to them way, way too much, too great of an ability to you know, construct what you're constructing there. Right-wingers, Republicans, neocons, are like Pavlov's laboratory dogs. When the pig man, Rush Limbaugh, or John Boehner, or somebody on the right tells them to bark, they all bark. When someone tells them to pee, they all pee. When someone tells them to stand up on their hind legs and beg for scraps, they stand up on their hind legs and beg for scraps. This is why I have zero respect for anyone who claims to be a Republican or a conservative in these times. There was a time when I could tolerate Republicans or conservatives because they ultimately had the interests as they perceived them to be the best interests of this country at heart. The right-wingers, Republicans, conservatives, neocons, whatever you want to call them today, they do not have that. What they have as their objective is the destruction of this country as a democratic republic and replace it with a corporatist theocracy. So they are no longer pro-American. Right-wingers, conservatives, and Republicans, by definition, are anti-American, and that's why I refer to the Republican Party as a terrorist organization, because its primary goal is to tear down and destroy this country, starting with its Constitution. This is what they're doing. I defy anyone out there, any of you little cheesy right-wingers who like to hide and listen to this program, but you don't have the guts to call in, I defy you to call in and refute what I just said. You can't do it. Republicans are not interested in preserving this republic. They are interested in replacing it. Listen to your boy down in Texas. Rick Perry is a good example. Listen to this freak over here in South Carolina, Sanford, whatever the hell his name is. Listen to the right-wingers. Listen to the people talking about all of a sudden, unless we institute some sort of martial law, we're going to have a new currency called the Amero, for Christ's sake. We're going to have roads that start in southern Mexico and go all the way to Montreal. Great big 30-lane highways. Woo! With Mexican truck. You know, they are hell-bent on destroying the country. Conservatives, Republicans, right-wingers are. And the inner cadre of these freak bastards are either murderous thugs like Cheney, or they are sick religionists as bad as any member of the Taliban or any a Muslim person who has decided he or she's had enough and commits suicide and takes 30 or 40 people with them. The American Taliban, which are fundamentalist, dominionist Christians, want to destroy America. I mean, goddammit, this is not hard stuff. It is clear. Look at what they do. Look at what they say. Look at how, they go after Barack Obama, who has done nothing but been a good president, especially from a right-winger's point of view. Jesus Christ. But they, like I said, they are like Pavlov's pack of hounds, and when they're told to pee, they'll pee. If it means pissing on their own leg, they don't care. They still will do it. It matters not. If it means putting your children at risk, doesn't matter. They'll do that. If it means making sure that their women are held in bondage, doesn't matter. They'll do that. Republicans, conservatives, neocons, right-wingers are just a very frightened, easily manipulable group of cowards. Never say never, forever is a long, long time. She said, never say never, forever is a long, long time. Time and time changes everything. Everything, everything but truth. Time changes everything. Before the hour. Thanks to our crew. The program was engineered by Kathy Bay. Ben Birch is our technical advisor. Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent. Bruce Enberg, economic affairs correspondent. And Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolfer, the program's ethical advisors. Executive producer also is Kathy Bay. Tonight's episode of the Mike Miller Radio Gumshoe, written and produced by Bob Alexander. And performed by the Mighty Malloy Radio Players. If you are a subscriber have been busy lately, Malloy's Uncensored Mailbag is up, the new video, relatively new. I think we put it up in the middle last week. So check that out. And if you are not a subscriber to the podcast, please consider becoming one. It costs you about 25 cents a program. It is less than $60 a year. So that's the sort of support that is absolutely critical to the program. If you are considering becoming a podcast subscriber, now's the time to do it. Just go to MikeMalloy.com. The info is there. Marge is calling from Maryville, Indiana. Hey, Marge.
Hey, Michael.
How you doing?
Oh, I don't know.
What? What?
Explain something to me, Lucy.
Okay. Okay, okay.
How come these mega oil companies are chomping around with mega profits every quarter?
Yeah.
And Chrysler and GM are going broke? How the hell they expect us to use that damn gasoline they keep raising the price on if we don't have any cars?
Oh, my. That's a very complex... it's a simple question with very complex answers, most of which I don't have a clue. Look, the auto industry today, Obama laid it out for the auto industry, something that should have been done 35 or 40 years ago. And what Obama essentially said was, get with the program, get with the 21st century, stop screwing around, stop the delays. We want cars that get 40 miles a gallon. The ones that are going to remain on carbon-based fuel. We want electric cars. We want fuel cell cars. We want the nonsense to stop, and we want it to stop now.
They could have done that 35 years ago.
Well, the Congress could have. Obama can do it now because
the car companies could have done it 35 years
ago. Sure, they could have. They absolutely could have. But there was no profit in being fuel efficient. Required, I don't know what it required. I have no idea why they didn't, unless they were just in perfect collusion with the oil companies.
What'd you say? You want to repeat that? I want to make sure I heard you right.
Well, I don't know if that were really the case. In order to make fuel efficient cars, 40 years ago, they would have had to have been completely redesigned.
No.
The cars that we have.
No.
To,
there's something that goes on at Daytona every year, and there's something else that goes on down at Indianapolis. Don't hand me that crap. That's all these people are running around racing cars and all the rest of it, that there wasn't, hundreds of guys that knew how to build a fuel-efficient car for less.
Well,
On
the racing circuit, you know what they get per mile. I mean, per gallon.
It doesn't mean that they don't know how to do better.
Oh, sure. They do know how to do better, but...
The talent was there. But people didn't want it to rise to the top.
Marge, I didn't do it.
No, I'm not blaming you. I'm just, I'm mad as hell. And I want to get my pitchfork, and I want to march on Washington. Only I don't want to march on Congress. I want to march on K Street and get between them and the wholly owned subsidiary that's called the Senate that they run.
That's a good idea. On your march, swing south, and I'll join you.
Okay.
I
heard what Dick Durbin said a week ago, didn't you?
No, what'd he say?
Oh, you missed that quote.
What'd he say?
Oh, he come flat out and said that the bankers own the Senate.
Oh, yeah, that. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. He did. But I don't have a pitchfork.
Well, we can find one, can't we?
Well, I've got some thunder sticks.
Oh, okay. Well,
I
just want to get their attention. I want to jab a few of these people in the ass and say, hey, wake up.
I hear you, Marge. Honestly, God, I hear you.
Oh, jeez. And the other thing that really kicked me off the other day, I don't know what I was watching.
Yeah.
But some guy is the head of the fourth largest mortgage banking company in the country, talking about the American dream. The American dream. You got that?
Yeah, yeah.
Owning a home. You know what his name was?
No.
Sanjay Das. Does that sound American to you? I mean, I don't want to sound bigoted or anything, but damn it, if you're talking about the American dream, of course he could have been born here, although I doubt it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much of the stuff that once upon a time, Made in America used to mean something.
It did, didn't it?
But you got to hunt far and wide to find something that still can carry that label through and through.
That's very true, because corporate America realized that there's no reason in paying workers a living wage. There's no reason to continue to take 10 cents a dollar on the dollar profit when you could ship everything to India and take 60 cents on the dollar profit, and the American middle class and the workers can go straight to hell, right?
And then if they don't, if they can't get the workers to take less, they can have special visas and import the workers from other countries here and say, we don't have this kind of talent here.
You sure all you want is a pitchfork?
Well, that's a good start.
But it's only a start. I hear you. All right, Marge, guess what?
We run out of time.
We're ready to go call it a night. And I realize you're an hour earlier than we are. But...
Well, go have a good nap and a shot of...
Jack Black.
Jack Daniels, yeah, okay.
That's it. Thanks, Marge.
Take care.
All right, you too. Fun and frivolity tonight, eh, Truth Seekers? Stop by the website, MikeMalloy.com. Become a podcast subscriber, okay? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.